Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, designed to help keep small businesses afloat after they were hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic last year. Another round is in President Biden's COVID relief plan, now making its way through the U.S. Senate. But not everyone who applied did it correctly. Some made mistakes. Others should not have applied at all because they weren't eligible, and they knew it. Now, some are facing federal prosecution. Well, tonight, a cautionary tale and some advice for those who may consider applying for or even defrauding the PPP system. My guests are Antonio Doss, District Director of the Washington Metropolitan Area District Office for the U.S. Small Business Administration, and Robert Jenkins, a federal criminal defense attorney. Lines are open. We're talking about it. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Antonio, good to talk to you again.
Well, Harold, it's great to be here. I'm glad to have an opportunity to share some things about our Paycheck Protection Program with your listeners.
And Robert, thank you so much for joining the program.
Well, thank you also for having me. I look forward to discussion and hopefully help to save a lot of aggravation and pain from some of your listeners.
I think that was really well said. Let us first talk to what the SBA is seeing right now, Antonio, a little less than a year after this program got off the ground the first time around. Are you seeing problems with people applying and when they shouldn't?
Well, you know, that is a part of what we experienced for sure last year. As some of our listeners may be aware, when Congress funded this program, they also gave a good amount of money to our Office of the Inspector General, which basically takes a look at fraud, waste, and abuse. And those folks in the Office of Inspector General's community have been pretty active. So we want to make sure that people are legitimately applying for and using the funds for the reason that they have been purposed. You know, these are all taxpayer dollars. One of the things that we've done this go-around is to try to add an additional buffer and review process. I think sometimes what happens when we have a significant need like we did last year, you know, everyone who's working in the Small Business Administration and so many of our partners and the lenders, we're racing to try to provide aid to the business community, the small business owners, whether they're small entrepreneurs or ones that have a few more employees. And sometimes in our gusto to help so quickly, there are some bad actors who participate in that process, knowing that that they may not necessarily intend to use the money the way it's supposed to. And others just sometimes come in unprepared and legitimately just have mistakes that they do make.
You talked about the Office of the Inspector General, and you said they've been pretty busy. Drill down a little bit on that. What have they seen?
Well, you know, they see a lot of things. They have a lot of tools and resources to analyze where these applications are originating, who's originating them. Are there any consistencies in terms of, sometimes you have this theory of like an application mill, so to speak, where somebody's just, taking loans out in another person's name. You know, identity theft is a growing problem. So there are people who specialize, really, that's their line of practice to defraud individuals of their identity and to exercise loan agreements and things in the name of somebody who's not actually the borrower. And so that is a problem. We have seen some cases where some really notable ones were really, really fancy vehicles, you know, the Lamborghini-type vehicles have been, that's been what some of those proceeds have been used for. It's not the most common thing, you know, but there have been some of those that have been out there. And so the Inspector General's office takes this very seriously. They want to make sure that people are not misusing, you know, your tax dollars and my tax dollars and all these other listeners when there's such a huge need for recovery because of the pandemic.
How was it supposed to work? Let's take out the mistakes and the fraud or allegations of fraud. If I had a small business that I worked with in my backyard, let's say, I don't know, I made tool sheds and I had five people working for me, and then all of a sudden this pandemic hits and my business goes from booming to almost bust, and this program comes along and I need to apply. How was this supposed to work for me?
The design of this program, by the legislative and executive branch working together, was to put in place a program that would allow that business owner to keep paying his or her employees, so those employees would not have to go out on the unemployment rolls, and the business could continue to function as best it could with whatever restrictions may or may not have affected it in terms of some of the COVID protocols that we have for social distancing. And as long as that business used those funds the way it's supposed to be, which is predominantly for payroll-related expenses, we would forgive the entire amount of the loan proceeds. So if a business got a $100,000 loan and they use it appropriately and they use it for payroll and other eligible expenses, we literally would tell the borrower that your $100,000 loan has been forgiven. And in essence, it almost became a grant.
Sounds like free money.
Yeah, yeah. And critical free money, because if you're a business who is hit with a major change in your revenue stream, you don't really have the ability to go to a traditional borrowing environment and say, I have the cash flow to pay it back, because your cash flow is uncertain at that point. And so this type of intervention was vitally needed by the federal government. And it's, part of why we were able to weather this pandemic storm as well as we have, notwithstanding that we've lost, way more businesses than we would have desired.
Mm-hmm. Robert, you represent clients who are now facing federal prosecution as a result of, let's say, issues concerning applying for PPP. Talk to me about your client base and what are they telling you? What are you hearing?
Well, we have a number of clients who are now either being actively investigated or their matters have matured to the level where they've actually been criminally charged with in relation to fraud activity. Some are reporting to us that in their haste to try to take advantage of the program, they may not have read all of the fine print, if you will, and they may have had a misunderstanding of whether or not they qualified to participate in the program. So we're hearing some of that. We're also have some clients who are indicating, hey, I just made a mistake. I misinterpreted what the criteria was, and I applied, and not with any criminal intent. I made a certification on the application, which the application does require that you certify that certain information that you're providing is true and accurate. But we also have one or two clients who it is not the application process that has caused them some difficulties, but the manner in which the funds were used. Has already been shared with your listeners, the program does restrict how the funds can be used. But we do have one or more clients who are now the subject of investigations concerning how the funds were in fact used.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the PPP, the Federal Paycheck Protection Program, designed to help small businesses during the pandemic crisis of last year. Another one could be coming up if the Senate passes President Biden's COVID relief plan, that $1.9 $1 trillion plan. Billions of dollars could be put into another PPP program. If you haven't applied but are thinking about doing it to help your business or even thinking about defrauding the business, this is a conversation for you. This is to keep you out of legal trouble and indeed out of jail. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have applied for this program, I'd like to hear from you. So, you know, Robert, you talked about making a mistake, and we do know that when this program first came out, that there was a huge crush of people who were applying. This information was not lost on the headlines where people were trying to get in, and there were, you know, long waits, whether they were, whether those waits were on the phone or trying to get the applications done. And, you know, at first blush, you can say, yes, mistakes are possible. But now, as you say, you have some clients who are facing criminal prosecution or have even been charged. Those mistakes are costly.
Very costly. And one thing I will say, that the federal government has been doing a fairly good job in trying to deter future individuals from making some of those same mistakes, where prosecutions are popping up. The Department of Justice has been releasing press releases, putting the public on notice of, you know, these prosecutions and the basis for the prosecution. So the opportunity to claim that you just were misinformed or uninformed is narrowing. But when the program first started, I think there was just so much discussion about it, about who would be eligible to apply and what the criteria was. There was a fair amount of confusion. And again, I think a lot of people rushed to apply because, as you indicated earlier, it sounded like free money. I don't think that's a fair characterization. I mean, it's not really free money. Free money seems to imply that there's no strings attached. There's no criteria. There are strings attached. There is a criteria that you do have to qualify for. And when you make application, if you're not careful and you make a material misrepresentation on the application, you certainly can subject yourself to criminal prosecution, to include prison.
Mm. How do you know?
I would add.
Yeah, go right ahead,
please. I'd like to add to that. You know, last year in particular, as the attorney is saying, we had a lot of rules coming really, really quick. And so, you know, it was easy for people to get things a little bit mixed up. And we did have quite a few businesses that would reach out to our office and say, hey, I applied for this Paycheck Protection Program loan based on this assumption, and I think I misinterpreted something. And so we had companies who legitimately said, hey, I don't want to end up in the wrong side of this situation. I'm going to give the money back. You know, I'd rather give the money back and deal with the shortage that I have right now than to take the money and run into a situation where it either wouldn't be forgiven and I'd have to repay it as a loan, or potentially be faced in a situation where I'm subject to an audit or some review that might involve me being characterized as inappropriately and intentionally using the money the wrong way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, that help for small businesses. If you applied and you have some questions, give us a call. Let's go to Stoney. Stoney calling from Upper Marlboro. Stoney, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. I was wondering whether or not if your employer applied for that particular loan and then they ended up laying off an employee, is that how are they protected then? I'm not sure if they did something. I lost my job, and I'm almost certain that they got that particular loan.
That's an interesting question.
And I don't know whether they did something fraudulent by letting me go. I don't know.
Antonio?
Well, the way the program works is designed to keep the maximum amount of employees as possible. We do know that in some cases it's possible for, even with getting the funds, it didn't cover all of the working capital expenses that existed for a business. It was really focused heavily on the payroll parts of it. So it is possible that that the other aspects of the business's environment didn't allow it to maintain the full employment. But okay, the goal was to encourage them to spend as much of that money on payroll and keep everybody employed. So, you know, the specifics of that particular business would have to be understood a little bit better to really be able to comment more fully on it.
Okay. Stoney, okay, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Paycheck Protection Program. Maybe you made a mistake if you applied, or maybe you were involved in some shenanigans. And if it is the latter and you haven't heard from the federal government yet, you could in short order. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I do want to ask you really quickly, Antonio, I've got about 30 seconds before I take a quick break. You mentioned that it was, as the name says, Paycheck Protection Program, but could that money have been used for some of the other infrastructure within the building to the business to help keep it up and rolling, such as, you know, restaurants and with things to protect you know, the restaurant goers or employees and that kind of thing?
Yes, for sure. The initial purpose last year was primarily about payroll, rent expense, certain utilities and things of that nature. This year we expanded it to include some of the PPE, like the personal protective equipment and things that were required, and some of the other expenses related to vendors and other things. So we broadened it a little bit more this year and even reduced the amount of the payroll component from 75% to 60% to make it more available to more businesses that really needed those funds.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, but don't forget you can hear this in every discussion via podcast on WHUR.com. And by the way, Mark, calling from Baltimore, don't hang up. We're going to take your phone call next. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are still taking phone calls, talking about the Paycheck Protection Program. So stay with us. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We have advice tonight for those who may have considered applying for or even defrauding the PPP system. That is the Payroll Protection Program, designed to keep small businesses afloat when they were hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic last year. Well, some people made mistakes and others defrauded the system. Let's just call it what it is. And they are facing some federal prosecution. If you have applied or plan to apply for the next round, if the Senate approves President Biden's COVID relief plan, this is a conversation for you. Of course, my guests are Antonio Dawes, District Director of the Washington Metropolitan Area District Office for the U.S. Small Business Administration, and Robert Jenkins, Federal Criminal Defense Attorney. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Mark, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Good evening. Had a general question. Needed a little bit of guidance, actually. I'm in the entertainment industry. I gig, I go out on tours, I play as a musician. My brother does security for artists. Our industry totally got shut down, and we're not, in the foreseeable future, it looks like we're not going to be working until maybe this fall. or something like that, are we eligible to apply for the Paycheck Protection as an individual? Since we don't have any employees, we're just ourselves. We would get a 1099 from whoever we would work for. And like a lot of times we would go on a tour for maybe 3 or 4, like 3 months. And they would give us a 1099 for our, for our salaries and everything like that. But, we basically work gig to gig. In a situation like that, am I eligible for something like that?
Yeah, you can actually apply for the PPP program, based on your 1099 status. I don't know that you, set yourself up as a corporate entity on top of that. It sounds like probably just more so as a 1099 employee. But we were cognizant of the gig economy when this whole program was put in place. One of the things that I would recommend that you take a look at doing, whether you're in Baltimore or anywhere around this whole country, the Small Business Administration has partners with organizations known as SCORE. They're mentors. They volunteer their time. The Small Business Development Centers, there are several in the Baltimore area, as well as our Women's Business Center program. Each and every one of those entities are available for you to go to and talk about your particular situation. They have people, particularly with the Small Business Development Center, on staff literally to help you figure out how to go through that process and seek and receive funds as you're eligible for the PPP program. So it's no cost to you, and it's certainly worth getting the information that they have to offer. Plus, you have an opportunity to start building a relationship with an entity that can help you advise and guide you along your path as a business owner.
So even though I'm more of a sole proprietor, I guess, I'm not incorporated, I don't have an LLC or anything like that. We would basically, we're working under our name and our personal social and everything like that. So I would still fall under that umbrella in order to, apply for that program?
Correct. And when you talk to them, they may even have some thoughts and recommendations about where you're trying to go in the future. You might be looking to do something different or bigger with your music industry work, and they can help you with that.
Okay. And that program again is?
The Small Business Development Center. You can also go to SBA, as in Small Business Administration, .gov, mm-hmm. and you'll see there information about all of our resource partners that can help provide you. There's a way you can just put your zip code in, and you'll find out those that are closest to you.
And okay. You said something about SCORE?
Yes, yeah, SCORE is another one of our partner entities. They are people who are business owners, former business owners, former business executives, who volunteer their time just to help people make better business decisions as they're starting and growing and sustaining their businesses.
Okay. How can our listeners find out more information about SCORE real quick? Because I've got to go to my next phone call.
Yes, SBA.gov.
Okay, there it is.
All the information you're going to want to have for PPP as well as SCORE, our Small Business Development Center network, all of our resource partners, and such information about our loan programs is all at SBA.gov.
Okay, Mark, thank you so much. Good luck to you. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ray, calling from Columbia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. I was calling. I think the prior caller just answered some of my questions. I was calling because in the confusion, I know they had the PPP loan as well as the SBA. Now, I applied for the SBA, and I got the loan. So that's totally different, right? Am I correct? Because I'm a gig worker as well, and I get paid on 1099.
Antonio?
Yeah, so we have the Small Business Administration has the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, which is a loan that you apply for directly to the Small Business Administration. So that might be what you're referring to. But also
yes,
the Small Business Administration has the PPP program, and that one is the one where you apply directly to the lender. So I'm not sure which route you went last time, but those are the two avenues.
Okay.
The economic disaster loan.
Yeah, economic injury disaster loan.
Yeah, completely different. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ray, thank you. Okay. Thank you so much for your phone call. So, Robert, two things I want to start with you about. For your clients who said, oops, I've made a mistake, kind of share the gamut of what mistakes they said that they've made that have gotten them in trouble.
Well, you know, Harold, some of it is as simple as, you know, certifying your number of employees. You know, there is a distinction between W-2 employees and independent contractors that receive 1099s. And some individuals, out of confusion, or at least that's the representation that they make, is that they may have combined W-2s with 1099 independent contractors or omitted 1099 contractors with their employees. And that could make a difference because, again, you're certifying that the information that you've provided is true and accurate. So we've seen that. We've also seen a confusion with some people. It's interesting that your last two callers mentioned what a lot of people refer to as the EIDL loan, the economic injury loan, which is different from PPP, but some people confuse the rules and the qualifications, and they're very different and distinct. And I know Anthony can speak to that. And there's some of the criteria where people believe that, hey, how much income my business generated in the last quarter or the last previous year versus reporting the income that your business has generated in the current fiscal year. So we've seen some of those types of misunderstandings or misrepresentations being made on the applications that are coming back to haunt individuals. Now, I think one of the things that Anthony mentioned is certainly something I would advise, because I believe federal investigators and prosecutors really look to whether or not in determining something is an honest mistake or whether or not it was some willful intent to defraud, is whether or not the applicant can demonstrate that they did try to exercise some level of due diligence to make sure that they provided accurate information. And reaching out to the SBA or other sources that they may be able to refer you to is certainly advisable before you start throwing down something on the application.
How are you advising those clients who say they've made an honest mistake? Have you been to court with any of them? Has that situation been resolved?
Well, Harold, unfortunately, if it's already matured to the point where we're in court, they've got a pretty serious problem on their hands. Mm-hmm. That means that it's already gone through the investigative process and a determination has been made that there was some evidence of criminal intent present. But in the event someone were to approach me after receiving the loan or even just after submitting their application, and they have some real questions as to whether or not the information they certified was in fact true and accurate, the best advice would be for them to, you know, cancel the loan or to return the funds if they have already received the funds. And I know of at least one occasion in which that is exactly what happened. Where the funds were returned because the applicant subsequently had some real questions as to whether or not the information they had certified as being true and accurate was in fact true and accurate.
Hmm. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lynn, calling from D.C.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
I actually, I drive for Uber, and when this all went down, and they said, oh, you can apply for PPP, that was fine. But then when, like, because it was really not safe to drive. And so a lot of us did apply, and we couldn't even get through whatever the first round is, because they prioritize large businesses, and you couldn't even get to the bank. And because we were Uber drivers, they were like saying, oh, you had to have a business account. well, we're gig economy. We don't have business accounts. And then they figured all that out. But then the little bit that trickled down to us was just like, I don't know anybody that got more than like a couple of thousand. And when you're doing it full time, and I was up to working 20 hours a day, sleeping in my car, just trying to like make even like a sixth of what I made before the COVID hit. So it really, I made that stretch. And I heard now that they have like maybe like better guidelines out so that we're able to get a little bit more, because when you're making like $60,000-$65,000 a year, and then they say, okay, you're eligible for $2,000, it's like, well, wait a minute. I mean, like Kanye West is a billionaire and he got $6 million and he has a billionaire wife. Why are they getting so much and we're not getting anything? The distribution was just crazy.
Well, let me see if Antonio can answer your question. Antonio, please go right ahead.
Well, you know, Lynn, this was a tough situation. I know for a lot of people in a situation similar to yours, you know, gig economy, Uber drivers, et cetera. And so we've made some adjustments this go around in 2021. So we put a maximum of 300 employees as a top level amount of employees that a borrower could have, to try to make sure we weren't getting some of those really large small businesses in the front of the line. More importantly, just recently, as of the 24th of this month, or of February, excuse me, President Biden actually put a two-week, 14-day exclusive period for applications for the PPP program for only those businesses with less than 20 employees. And this was an intentional move to say, let's make sure that the door is open wide for the smallest of the small businesses so that they can actually come in and be able to get access to those funds earlier. And then so we're looking at making sure that there's some additional tools and resources to make it easier for the borrowers to be able to, at that smaller level, to be able to get access to these funds. And in fact, what we're seeing this year is the average loan size is down considerably from last year because of these reforms to make this program more of a program for the small businesses and not just those ones that became the headline cases where someone who was identified as being wealthy or a business that was, you know, a little bit larger than people thought should have been getting these taxpayer-funded programs was taking advantage of them.
Lynn, thank you so much for your phone call. Good luck to you. I want to talk a little bit more, Antonio, about something that a previous caller, you know, alluded to. So if you apply for a loan and you spent the money in what you deemed would be a legitimate way, you were not willfully criminal, but then you had questions or concerns about whether or not you were truly eligible, something fell through the cracks and you realized perhaps that you weren't supposed to get it, and then you get a bill, because people are getting bills now about, you know, for those PPP loans last year. If you just paid the money back, you know, month to month, as was agreed, are you in trouble for taking out the loan in the first place if you're paying the money back?
Yeah, if you're essentially when that happens, we're at a position where we have to make a determination, as Attorney Jenkins was saying earlier, was this really a fraudulent situation, or was it just legitimate? I misunderstood the guidelines, or maybe in some of the cases, instead of spending 60 or 70% of the funds on payroll, I only spent 30%.
Yes, great example.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to get 100% of that loan forgiven. You'll be able to get a percentage of it forgiven based on how well you complied with the terms of this particular program. So it's not necessarily an all or nothing, particularly for those cases where it's just the intentions were to be able to hire people, but I couldn't hire them back. My employee moved, or, you know, some businesses only have three or four employees.
And so if, you know, if two of them move out of the area and they weren't able to hire back anyone else at the time, you know, they're going to have a deficit in terms of how many employees that they have. So there are some very legitimate parts to that. The big thing for business owners really is about the preparation, making sure that you're keeping excellent records of the loan that you took out before, all the materials that related to that, the paperwork, so that you know everything that, that you said in that prior loan application, and making sure you can account for your payroll expenses, your other eligible expenses, including in that the insurance that you pay for your employees, your property and damage, supplier costs, workers, protection, all those kind of things are included in it. So you want to be able to make sure you have excellent records, not only because you have a PPP loan, but because that's fundamental to being a good business owner, to have a command of your financial material, your financial statements, balance sheet, income statement, and that you're working with a good, reputable accounting firm or CPA who can exercise the good principles that are applied to, we call it GAAP, but generally accepted accounting practices, so that your books are legitimate. That takes so much of the worry out of it if you just do things legitimate.
I wasn't talking necessarily about those who were seeking loan forgiveness. I'm talking about those who, when the bill comes due, and there are some businesses that have been able to survive and to pick themselves up, and they may have gotten $10,000 or $20,000. And if I'm not mistaken, the amount, the percentage of the loan was, what, 4%, the interest on that or something like that?
Yeah, it's very low.
It's very, very – yeah, okay, so it's really low. And a legitimate business person said, okay, whether I got this the right way or not, you know, I've got a legitimate business and I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do and pay this money back. I'm not looking for loan forgiveness. I guess my question is, if they are in the process of paying it all back, not looking for loan forgiveness or anything like that, do they still get in trouble?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I could say it as a blanket, because it would probably depend a little bit about the circumstances of it. But if they've used it at all for legitimate purposes, they should at least seek forgiveness.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, if for some reason they think that they're really outside of the scope of that and they just say, I want to just pay it back, you know, some of that comes down to how much we are going to look after. We can't police 100% of the population.
And I'm sure the federal government will take a check. So
yeah,
that,
yeah.
Okay. Like the IRS.
Yeah. They will.
They will take a check. But when you go up, but in going up against the federal government in court, Robert, here's my question. Some of the charges that the more serious charges that your clients could face include wire fraud, bank fraud, and of course, you know, false statements are some of the primary crimes. Help me with the wire fraud thing. I mean, we kind of know what the bank fraud thing is. Obviously, false statements, not telling the truth. I know years ago here in Baltimore, where I live, a former police commissioner lied on a FHA loan. And he went to federal prison for that. So, yeah. And that's a federal document. But the wire fraud thing, help me with that.
Well, you know, wire fraud, it isn't really as complicated as what it sounds. And our society today, you know, we're all plugged into the internet and electronics. If you cause to be transmitted through some electronic means, the internet, your cell phone, even a fax machine, the application for the PPP loan to be transmitted to the SBA, to the bank, or wherever it needs to be sent to, and that application contains material misrepresentations, which causes you to receive the benefits of the program, i.e. the loan, because you transmitted that false information through a wire communication, all right? The internet would qualify. Your cell phone would qualify. Again, a fax machine would qualify. That's what really makes it wire fraud.
I see.
Right? You're using a wired means to perpetrate a fraud.
Okay. And so just use the mail, but then it's mail fraud.
Then it's mail fraud.
There you go. Yeah, we all watch Law and Order. So let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Renee, calling from D.C. Renee, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. My question was related to PPP loan. How does it help companies that only have 1099 contractors rather than employees? And a follow-up question is, how does the PPP loan compare to the disaster relief loan from the Small Business Association?
Go right ahead. She missed the earlier conversation, but go right ahead, Antonio.
No problem. Thanks again for the question, Renee. So if you're a company that only really has 1099 employees, it's harder, obviously, because you're going to have very few employees, probably the owner and maybe another person who are on payroll. So you can still apply for the PPP program because you do have some salary expenses. But those who are 1099 employees have the ability to apply directly. So they're separate. The Paycheck Protection Program and the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program are similar, but they are different in two significant ways. The Paycheck Protection Program is designed to keep your employees on staff and in a paid status and to cover certain other rent and other expenses. And if you use the funds according to the purpose of that program, you can have that loan forgiven and not actually have to repay it. The Economic Injury Disaster Loan, or EIDL, as it's called sometimes, on the other hand, is one that does not have the forgiveness element. So you do have to repay that. The good news is it's not based on a payroll calculation. It's really based on your gross revenues. So if you're a company that does have 1099 employees and you have some other expenses, your gross revenue amount might yield you a better loan amount. And although you have to repay it back, we are not requiring a quick repayment. You can repay this loan over 30 years. So it's a working capital loan with a 30-year repayment, which up until this all happened with the pandemic, you couldn't find anywhere in the United States.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Renee. I only have a few minutes left, but Robert, here's something that I'm really kind of interested in. When your clients are charged, and this is kind of a law school 101, I guess, how do they know? If you commit a crime against the state, if you live in Fairfax County, Prince George's, Montgomery, whatever, and you rob a 7-Eleven and you get away, but eventually you get caught, the county police will come and see, will come in and arrest you. But what happens in cases like this? These are nonviolent crimes, and this is a process that has happened over the course of a year or so. Do federal marshals come to get you? Do you get a letter? What happens?
We, like with most white collar crime matters, the investigations usually proceed in a similar manner, and they usually start off with the agency, whether it be the SBA or some other regulatory agency, referring the matter on to the FBI or some other federal investigative authorities. And that's when they believe that there's reason to believe that some fraud may have been committed. Oftentimes, the FBI, once they become engaged, they will start to conduct their investigation, principally by gathering records and conducting interviews. More often than not, at some point in time, they will make contact with the applicant and let the applicant know that they are the subject of an investigation.
So let me stop you there, because that was really vague. How do they make contact with you? Do they show up at your door? Do they send a letter? Do they call you? What?
No, oftentimes they will show up. Oftentimes they will show up, FBI agents. You know, their years of training, they've learned that the best way to get a response from someone is not to send them a letter in the mail or to call them on the phone, but to show up unannounced. So oftentimes that's the first contact that is made. If it progresses from there, oftentimes a U.S. attorney, assistant U.S. attorney, will then become involved in the case. And you may receive what's called a target letter, putting you on formal notice that you are the target of a criminal investigation and apprising you of your right to be assisted by an attorney. If you choose to engage an attorney, oftentimes that attorney will contact the U.S. Attorney's Office, maintain contact with them throughout the course of the investigation. And if it gets to a point where formal charges are going to be filed, more often than not, the U.S. Attorney's Office will contact your defense attorney and let you know that an indictment or some criminal information has been filed against your client, and they often will give you an opportunity to surrender your client to the marshals or appropriate local authorities. So generally, that's the way it goes. They oftentimes don't kick your door in, if you will, for these type of alleged offenses. But that doesn't mean they can't. Just normally, that's not the way it goes.
Well, there it is. For those folks who have purchased those Lamborghinis when they were supposed to be paying employees or not applying at all. Again, a cautionary tale. We know how to reach Antonio, but Robert, how can people reach you? Do you have a website that you can share with us real quick?
Absolutely. It's BonnemanJenkinsLawOffice.com. You can reach out to us there. You can also get all our social media information there, so you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, in the whole yard.
Let me hear that one more time, the website.
It's Bynum and Jenkins.
Okay.
Yes, Bynum and Jenkins Law Office.com.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Antonio Dawson, Robert Jenkins, thank you so very much for your information. And we hope that we help some people. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, March 2nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.